not speak to it, then I'm going to go to the contract. And so my point of disagreement is that the statute does speak to it. It does not use the words revocable, and it does not use the word irrevocable. But statutes are interpreted in the context of common law. And I can't imagine that Minnesotans would not be surprised to find that they could not revoke the right of a healthcare provider to disclose their health records to a third party.
Are you arguing that the statute is ambiguous in terms of the duration of the consent? Because under the statute, a provider may release health records with a signed and dated consent form from the patient, and then that's subdivision 2, and then subdivision 4 provides that the consent is valid, except as provided in this section, a consent is valid for 1 year or for a period specified in the consent or for a different period provided by law.
So, Judge, I don't believe the ambiguity rests in the statute. What I would apply is the statutory construction that statutes are interpreted in the context of common law.
Don't we also apply the plain language? And if it's clear and unambiguous, we apply it as written. And if there's some ambiguity, then we look to principles of statutory construction.
Well, let me suggest this. As to subdivision 4, that has no bearing on this case because the consent form supplied in this case had far exceeded the one-year mark. So we can knock subdivision 4 out of the contest for a basis to affirm the district court's ruling.
Okay. I'm sorry, I don't understand. Can you repeat that, please? I don't.
More than a year. Subdivision 4 of the Act says that it's valid for a year or for another period specified by law. Mr. Christofferson.
And just to be clear, it says valid for 1 year, and there's three different things separated by two ors. Is valid for 1 year or for a period specified in the consent or for a different period provided by law?
That fair point, Your Honor.
But it doesn't, I'm not sure exactly what you said. I forgot.
I was overemphasizing the one-year portion.
But I think you were saying the statute's not relevant. It seems to me that statute is what the district court applied, and that statute naturally applies to this case, right?
Well, Judge, I think there's some confusion about what the district court applied, because on one hand, the district court says, I'm not looking to the statute. The statute's silent, and therefore, I'm going to look to the consent form. But the way I read the district court's opinion, it was impossible for it to get to the consent form without first finding that the statute did not apply at any point.
No, but the statute says a period specified in the consent.
But that's not what the district court, that's not the provision that the district court applied. What the district court applied was the fact that the word revocable or irrevocable was not present in the statute. That's the reliance of the district court. And I understand this court can take a different route, but it would be a surprise to all of the parties that that's the route the court would take. What the district court relied on was that the fact that the words revocable were not within the consent form.
Could I turn your attention to the middle of page 7 of your addendum?
Yes.
There's a sentence there, slightly above the middle of the page. The court finds that, let's see, the only reasonable interpretation of subdivision 4, colon, a period specified in the consent includes any period specified in the consent agreement, such as a period during which the consent of a patient is made irrevocable by the agreement. Seems to me that indicates the district court was following the statute. Statute points to the consent form, and then the district court proceeded to interpret the consent agreement from that point forward.
And that's a fair reading of it, Your Honor, if you take the word consent out of context. So the word consent must always be put in the context of the patient's right to revoke. And so it would not be a surprise that the legislature says that is valid for the period of consent. The argument or the disagreement that the parties is having is, what is the period that is valid for consent? Is it simply what the patient writes down on the form, and the patient then is bound by that time period, has no ability and no power to revoke that consent? That's the core of the issue. And so to read the word consent as a matter of simple, to take it out of the context of the common law is an error in statutory interpretation, is the argument that we're making here today. and that the district court, even if you find that it was reading the statute plainly, you can't read a statute plainly without giving the words their context. And so the word consent in American jurisprudence has a context. It has always meant that the grantor has the ability to revoke consent. Now, the respondent cites to some cases. I think they're all distinguishable, whether they're revocable trusts and things, irrevocable trusts and things like that. All of those have reliance aspects on them. In this instance, the provider had no reason to rely on the patient's consent.
Mr. Brown, can I? We'll just presume for a moment. It sounds like everybody agrees the statute's silent on the revocability or unrevocability, however phrase you want to use. So would you agree that then if the terms of the consent, getting to that point you just made, any one of us can agree to make our consent irrevocable? As a matter of statutory, simply the form itself, the contractual language, if your client, instead of being a little bit perhaps more vague, it just simply in bold letters says, I may not revoke this release form absent a prior approval from my probation agent. Would that not be, as a matter of law, end the discussion? We would not get into common law. The statute's silent, so we look at the form the parties signed.
Judge, I think that's plausible. I don't think that's what happens in everyday life when people go to see their health care providers, but I'll grant you that it's plausible.
Well, we all should read the fine print, in other words. But the point being is if it's bold, people can contract to make it revocable as a matter of law.
Correct. In the generic, I agree with you that that's plausible. That's not what happened in this case, which leads me to the second point of the argument.
Can I just inquire, then, your interpretation of the bold language at the bottom of the document, how do you read that other than a period of non or irrevocability?
Well, Judge, I think let's go back to what the district court found out about that is now that we're on the actual consent issue. If the district court's right about the statute, then we go to the consent form to see if it's actually an irrevocable consent. The district court found that there was a question of fact on that issue as to whether that provision even applies to Alpha. Now, the provision doesn't exist in law. There's a statutory miscite. And the federal law that actually applies, we've cited in our footnote, says that the consent forms must tell the person that they have the right to revoke. I mean, listen, at core, sure, a person can give away any right they choose with full knowledge and full understanding of what they're giving away. That includes consent. I grant that much. As a factual matter, the district court found that a fact persists as to whether that is what occurred here in this matter. So on the second issue, I think that the respondents completely lose because the district court's order is clear that there's a factual question. But to answer the court's question in the generic, the answer is yes. At core, the question is this. Imagine that a party goes to or is engaged in litigation. They sign a consent form. It's ordinarily applicable for a year. The litigation ends. I think most folks would be surprised to learn that Minnesota law tells them that the provider still has the ability, without any repercussions, to share their records with third parties. And that is essentially what happened here. And I would suggest to the court that we wouldn't be standing here if it weren't for the probation context. So I want to talk a little bit about that. I don't think it makes a difference whatsoever that
Can I just inquire, though, again, that bold paragraph would only apply if one's on probation or parole or subject to a criminal sentence. So if I sign this release form, it will expire naturally, and it would be a violation of the statute at that point beyond the 60 days, assuming there's no changed circumstances. My consent at that point has revoked naturally. It expired, it perhaps is a better phrase.
And I think there's a distinction between revocation and expiration. The question before the court is, can a patient revoke consent prior to expiration? Is there any statutory prohibition on a patient revoking the consent of a third party to disclose their health records prior to the expiration of the consent form? If you take the word consent and apply it in the context of the common law as a means of interpreting the statute, the answer is that every patient has that right. So that I may have litigation going on for 6 months, I may have a medical condition that I want disclosed for a period of 6 months, and the issue is resolved in 2 months. And the healthcare provider at that point would not be free, under the statute, the way I read it, to share those records with third parties because they know They have no reliance, unlike the cases cited by the respondent. They have no consideration, unlike the notion put forth by the respondents that this was a matter of contract. Mr. Christofferson had no contract with Alpha for the release of his health records. He had a contract with Alpha for the purposes of getting treatment. Now, sure, the treatment was ordered by his probation officer. And this is the argument I made to the district court, and I believe it's right here today, that whatever consequence Mr. Christofferson may have suffered because of his decision to revoke consent and not have his medical records was for him to suffer, as any person who is engaged in some requirement. He was not ordered by the court to go up to therapy. He was ordered by the Department of Corrections. The Department of Corrections ordered him to go to therapy. They did not order him to choose a specific therapist. It was up to him. He had the freedom to choose his therapist so long as they provided the particular type of therapy that the Department of Corrections wanted him to undertake. As you can see from his affidavit, once he left that therapist, he went to another therapist that provided the same services. And to my understanding, he suffered no penalty for it. So the world is falling argument in the context of corrections and not being able to manage people on probation, I think, is flatly wrong. If there is a consequence, it is a consequence that Mr. Christofferson should suffer in the context of the criminal justice system, not in the healthcare system. He, like every other patient, has the right to revoke his consent.
So I understand he sent the letter revoking his consent, but for purposes of his statutory claim, the question isn't whether he, let me rephrase it. The question here is whether he has a claim for penalties under 144.298 based on the release of records under the Health Records Act. And isn't that question defined by the statutory language itself, which doesn't provide that where consent has been revoked, the claim, you know, there's a claim for release of records where consent has been revoked. There's nothing specific that says you have a claim if you send in a letter revoking your consent and then the records are released.
And, Your Honor, I think we're having the same conversation, just in a different
And let me step back for a second. I certainly understand your client's concern here and the public policy issue, but I'm focusing on the language of the statute, which is where we start our inquiry.
Again, what the penalty for portion of the statute is, and I see my time is about to expire, I'd like to answer the question,
please.
If I may. The penalty portion of the statute says if you disclose records in violation of the Health Records Act, Mr. Christofferson is entitled to a compensatory damages. The way you get there under the statute is to say, well, there's only one issue in contest here, and that's the issue of consent. No one else is arguing any of the other subdivisions that would be relevant. So the question is, if they did not have consent, whether it was revoked or never provided, the question is still the same: can they be penalized for it? And I believe the answer to that is yes. Consent had been revoked, and therefore they did not have consent. They had no other authorized means under the law to disclose it, and therefore they violated the act. So statutorily, I think the language is precise. The question is, what does consent mean? What does consent mean?
Okay, thank you for that clarification. You can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Brian Kluke, and along with Cheryl Hood-Langle, I represent the respondent in this case, Alpha Service Industries, Incorporated. The president and CEO of Alpha is here with us in the courtroom today to hear the argument. Your Honors, I wanted to begin by addressing some of the matters that were brought up during the conversation with the appellant. One of the questions was, is the statute ambiguous? I don't think there's any argument that the statute is ambiguous. What appellant is arguing is that the statute is clear in that the common law right to revoke is installed in the word consent that's in the statute. So I don't think that's an ambiguity argument. They're arguing it is clear, it just has a particular interpretation.
Well, what's your view?
Oh, that's simply wrong. That using the common law to install the right to revoke in the word consent, there isn't a basis for that, because even at common law.
But what's your view as to whether the statute is ambiguous or unambiguous?
We believe the statute is not ambiguous. And it is just as the district court concluded. We agree fully with the district court's analysis. And she found no ambiguity, really no legal ambiguity in the case, not in the statute, not in the consent form, which was appropriate to construe according to contract law. So,
Mr. Kluk, would you agree then, absence a prohibition in the terms of a consent form, one may revoke said consent?
Yes, absolutely. The district court concluded, and we agree, that the statute is silent on the issue of revocation. And that's the other point I wanted to clarify. The district court said the statute is silent on revocation. It's not silent as to consent, or duration. So it's silent as to whether you can revoke, but the statute clearly says, as your Honor pointed out, the duration specified in the consent form governs. And because the statute is silent on the issue of revocation, the parties are free to agree to that.
What about in this situation? I go into my doctor's office, I sign a consent form, it doesn't specify a period, there's no language regarding the length of the consent. 2 months later, I decide I want to switch doctors, so I send them a letter saying I hereby revoke my consent, and then they get a request for health records from some third party and release them. Are they liable under the statute?
I believe they would be liable, Your Honor, because in your hypothetical, there was not a provision about whether your consent was irrevocable or not.
What about the language in subpart 4 that says a consent is valid for 1 year?
Well, it says 1 year or when the
or
duration...
Or a period specified in the consent. And under my hypothetical, there wasn't a period specified in the consent or for a different period provided by law.
Well, in Your Honor's hypothetical, you revoked your consent after 2 months and outside...
Right, but so it was less than a year.
Correct. In your hypothetical, is there a duration specified in the consent form?
No.
Right.
So what I'm wondering is, what does the language "the consent is valid for 1 year" mean then, if you're reading in to the statute that consent can be revoked?
If there is nothing in the consent form that speaks to revocability. So under
doesn't that render the language "the duration of consent" in subdivision 4, that it says a consent is valid for 1 year, isn't that inconsistent with that language?
Not at all. If you simply sign a consent form that has no specified duration, it would expire in 1 year under that language.
Unless it's revoked.
Prior to that. Right. So I think that's...
So your view is consent can be revoked unless the consent form itself defines...
Says, yes.
Has a revocability provision.
I would view revocation...
Irrevocability provision.
Right. I would say revocation is a right you have unless you agree otherwise, as was the case here. The consent form here specifically said this is not revocable until the conclusion of your sentence.
Didn't the court find that there was a material question of fact regarding that revocability provision in the Alpha Services consent form?
No, the court found a question of fact, but specifically found that question was not material. Right, and so that's the important distinction. And you can see that it's very clear that the district court was very focused on that precise question and dealt with it very carefully. So the district court said, yes, there is an issue of fact about whether Alpha is such a provider as described in the federal statute, which is 2.35, but she said that was not material to the analysis. Because what that federal statute does is it informs what the consent form says, but Alpha is not subject to that particular federal law.
I'm going to follow up with that. This language, it's perhaps inartful at best, but it looks like it's a proposition of law. It's referencing a CFR. And the parties, as I see from the briefs, are disputing what the CFR. Does that, how does the one incorporate that as a irrevocability if there's a dispute beyond the words as to whether the law applies to this particular case, to then see if it applies legally and factually that, oh, okay, now it's either revocable or irrevocable?
Yes, Your Honor.
And is that what the judge was getting at in this issue of genuine issue of material fact? And she had another basis, she rendered the decision, therefore didn't need to address it, I understand.
Right. One thing to clarify from the get-go is that the language of the consent form, just the words of it alone, are sufficient for the irrevocability. It does reference the federal statute, which parallels the language. So, in other words, it's belt and suspenders. The language of the consent form alone is sufficient, but it includes the reference to the federal statute, which it says the same thing with regard to revocability.
But you're talking about the bold, the capital, the last paragraph. You believe that language, without reference to the law, is sufficient for his acknowledgement that this is irrevocable.
Right. And again, you notice that it is in bold. It says specifically that this cannot be revoked until the conclusion of his sentence.
Can I ask you this then? Is there not a conflict between that paragraph and the paragraph before it? If I understood what you said earlier, an expired consent, it becomes a moot point in terms of revocability. It's no longer in existence, correct?
I'm sorry. Say the question again, please, Your Honor.
I understand that this consent shall expire 60 days after it is given, or when there is a substantial, on this is the first sentence of the, my point I'm getting at that entire paragraph, let's presume for a moment, what I'm getting at is when one expires, you don't have to revoke it, it's gone. There's right. No longer an authority. So notwithstanding that last paragraph that references probation parole, if it had expired, and the scenario I'm thinking of is if I'm a probationer, and it is a requirement of my probation to receive the treatment, but there's no change of circumstance, meaning my sentence isn't executed, none of those other provisions apply, and I revoke after this on the 61st day, would that not be true? That would trump then the last paragraph.
I would agree in that scenario, but in this case, one of the provisions referenced does apply.
So, and so that's what I'm getting at. So the only reason the last paragraph continues, in your opinion, and that's why you believe the court got it correct, is because the release was still in effect because of change of circumstance.
Yes. So the specific to that paragraph you're referencing, the operative portions would be after the or in the first sentence, where it says, when there is a substantial change in my status, and then the change in status is number four, where it says, my sentence has been fully executed. And so that's where, because Mr. Christofferson was on a five-year period of probation, his sentence had not, and again, the district court addressed what does that mean, the full duration of his sentence, and he was still within that five-year period.
And there's no dispute factually, the parties, to your understanding, to that fact.
Correct, and to my knowledge, there are no factual disputes presented, or there are not questions presented to the court. The court did reference there was that factual issue, but again, that was not material to the analysis. And to survive summary judgment, you need a genuine issue of material fact. Your Honors, I also just want to briefly focus on the context of the criminal justice system referral treatment. One of the things that we emphasize in our brief, and I think is extremely important here, is that the probation officer is relying on being able to get the records that are from probation-ordered treatment. So there was some discussion with the appellant about reliance. The probation officer, the Minnesota Department of Corrections, is sort of an involved third party in this transaction. This isn't as simple as Mr. Christofferson, you know, of his own accord, walks in off the street and asks for treatment. That would be a different context. One of the things that you'll notice about the consent form specifically is it says, consent form, quote, for criminal justice system treatment referrals. And that is extremely important in this case. If the court interprets 144.293 as the appellant is asking, it will put providers like my clients essentially in a catch-22, where if they release records to the probation system, or rather the patient could simply suddenly revoke after one of his treatments, and then the record from that treatment could not be provided to the probation officer who has an interest in this case. So that would be extremely detrimental to providers like my client, But the biggest thing is it's not mandated by the language of the statute. And just circling back, there is no common law rule that says your consent cannot be irrevocably given. We cite several examples in our brief, whether it's waiver, whether it's common law dedication of a road, and there are many other instances besides the common law where you can irrevocably agree to grant a right. And that's what happened here.
Am I correct that the terms of his conditional release are not in the record of this case?
I believe that is correct, Your Honor. Other than, you know, it is specified that it was a 5-year duration during which time he was ordered to undergo treatment.
So where is that in the record, that he was required to undergo treatment?
It is at least in the briefing that was before the district court. I could
what
not
about
point
the factual
you.
Factual record. I mean,
I could not point you to where it is in the factual record.
And so, Mr. Klug, really, there's many things you agree with. Appellant's counsel is statute silent on the issue. One may revoke pursuant to a consent form freely, even during an unexpired period, unless, and here's where the only difference really that you have with appellant's position, unless the form itself creates an irrevocability.
Yes.
And again, assuming that irrevocability, it's an unexpired consent, as factually the parties agree was the case here.
Right. And again, I think that is so because the statute is silent on the issue of revocability. And when the statute does not speak to it, the parties are free to agree as they wish.
If that's the case, I'm just curious. Again, the language, it's a proposition of law, but your point being, and perhaps you might have a recommendation for better wording, but presumably this is a standard language any time that Alpha is aware that a patient is on probation, parole, or some other conditional release situation.
Yes, well, and I think that's the reason for a specific release regarding criminal justice system referrals. Is exactly that concern, and that's why it includes the irrevocability provision in this consent form.
So under your interpretation of the law, the public policy concern raised by appellant is addressed by the party's ability to negotiate for revocability or not.
I think that's right. And one of the things that there's sort of this interplay between Minnesota's Health Records Act and the federal law referenced. The Minnesota Health Records Act is very broad. It would apply to really any release of medical records as you posited, whether you simply go into a clinic for treatment, whereas the federal statute and this consent form is specific to criminal justice referrals. So I think, you know, the Minnesota Health Records Act provides a very broad basis, and then the parties are free to work within that sphere, let's say, as they agree to. And that's what the purpose of the consent form is in the context of a criminal justice referral. Unless there are any further questions, Your Honor, I would ask that you affirm the district court.
All right, thank you. Any rebuttal by appellant?
First, I apologize. I'm deeply embarrassed about my phone going off. I thought I'd handled that, so my apologies to the court. I want to start with where the appellant left off with the consent form. Let's suggest that the court doesn't agree with the statutory argument and we're stuck with the consent argument. And I think the statutory argument is correct, but assuming that much.
I'll make sure I understand. When you say the statutory argument, I thought the parties agreed the statute was silent.
We do agree on that, but we give different meanings to the silence. I suggest that silence is not a reason to find that consent is not revocable. The other side suggests that silence means that consent is not revocable, that it's simply a matter of contract law. I read the word consent in the context of the common law, which has always included the ability to revoke.
But Mr. Klug just answered my question. He would agree with you that it's revocable unless the consent form itself makes it irrevocable.
Then I'll take that win, because I think that's precisely the position that I've advanced throughout the courts, is that it's revocable, and parties can give up the right to revoke in a matter of contract. So that leaves us with the consent form. I'll start with, again, the world is falling argument as to the catch-22 it puts providers in. There's no such thing. There's a simple solution. If you don't have a release, you don't provide the information. So the probation officer calls you up, the conditional release officer calls you up and says, I want to know how Mr. Brown is doing. Your response is, I can't tell you, he's revoked consent.
The probation officer or the conditional release officer then has an option. They can snatch the person off the street. That's completely within the DOC's control. They can go to the court and demand an order. But it is not for the healthcare provider to insert itself in disputes with the criminal justice system and a provider, which is why I find this Exhibit 1, the four criminal justice treatment records, that goes to show that they believe that there's a different standard for those who are involved in the criminal justice system under the Health Records Act and those who are not. There is not. The statute makes no distinction between the two. Going down to the language that's in bold, the great majority of this language is irrelevant until you get to the part where it says, federal law prohibits me. Federal law prohibits me from revoking. First of all, that's not true. Federal law does not prohibit you. But even if Mr. Christofferson believed that federal law prohibited him, the district court found that there was a question as to whether the federal law even applied to this case. And I don't know how the summary judgment can be sustained where the district court has identified a question of fact as to whether this federal law even applies whatsoever to Mr. Christofferson's case. The district court's reasoning for that is found in the page 11 of the addendum, first paragraph, full paragraph. It says, first, he didn't bring a claim under the CFR. Well, you can't bring a claim under the CFR. So, and she's right about that. He didn't bring it because you can't. He did make a complaint to the department that regulates this, and they said if this happens again, right now we'll handle it administratively, but if it happens again, we'll figure out the right response. And then second, she made a statutory analysis. And so this is why it's confusing as to whether the district court is interpreting the statute or interpreting the release. She goes back and says, well, didn't make it a claim under the federal statute, and now 144.293 says that subdivision 2 says it's valid for the period specified in the release and thus irrevocable. And so the argument that there is
that it's irrevocable for an irrevocability period stated within the consent form.
Correct. Using the statutory language to suggest that if the district court was simply looking at the form, and saying I'm not looking at the statute, I'm simply looking at the form, then there's no way the respondent can win. Because what the district court found was that there's a question of fact as to whether this federal law, which literally does not exist, whether this federal law prohibits an individual from revoking consent.
So in the district court, I don't believe you made an argument that the inaccurate citation or that the terms of federal law determine whether or not this paragraph applies.
That's not true, Judge. It's found in the summary judgment brief. We pointed out to the district court that there was no such citation, and we also provided the district court with a citation to the CFR, which you can also find in our brief, that indicates that people in the criminal justice system have the same rights to revoke consent as anyone else. And in fact, I believe the district.
I know you referred to the federal regulation, and I think you said that federal law does not make it irrevocable, but. But as far as interpreting this document, which is akin to a contract, I don't think you made the argument that he did not agree in this final paragraph to what it says in the last clause. I mean, he says, I know what it says. I understand that federal law prohibits me from revoking this consent.
Well, let me suggest, and I see my time has expired, I'd like to just answer the court's question. One, I don't believe it's a contract. I don't believe contract principles apply. That's an issue that this court has addressed and found that consent principles and contract principles are separated. And second, to the extent that you want to read it as a contract, simply declaring something to be doesn't suggest that there isn't an exchange of consideration for the same. What, at best, what Alpha could be considered to have done was put the person on notice as to what federal law is. It is not a term or condition of the contract. It's a notice provision at best. And I'd ask the court to take a look at the expose case where a similar healthcare provider attempted to make a notice provision a form of a contract, and it's simply not. It's not a contract.
If I may ask one more question,
sure.
Judge. More generally, it seems like the arguments in this court are getting kind of far afield from the arguments in the district court. I mean, and it seems like, for example, the issue of consideration, which you raised in your appellate brief, I don't think that issue was was presented to the district court at any time. I mean, it seems like this case has kind of gravitated from issue, you know, it keeps moving from issue to issue. And would you agree with that? And if so, could you explain to me how that happened and how? But I mean, on the issue of consideration, for example, I mean, we would be analyzing that in the first instance, right? Because the district court didn't do so.
Well, Judge, I appreciate how the court sees it as shifting, but let me explain how that came to be. I don't think any of the parties argued contract. What we argued was the statute. It's the district court that made the argument that I'm going to apply contract principles, and so it is the first time in which we've had an opportunity to address the issue of consideration. So the short answer to your question is yes, you for the first time would be considering the issue of consideration within the context of contract, which I don't think applies to the issue of consent. But all of these issues bubbled up because of the way the district court wrote its order. None of the parties anticipated that this would be the means in which the district court would resolve the issue. It was simply a statutory argument and a public policy argument. We ask that the court reverse the district court and remand for further proceedings.
All right, thank you for your arguments and briefing. This is a very interesting case, and we will look closely at the issues.